Anderson, your host for this particular episode, and I'm here with very special guest Todd Robert Anderson, who I'm told is the guest every week. So
this is a really,
welcome to the Toddcast.
Really poorly designed sound studio.
Oh yes, I forgot to mention that we are not in a special professional podcast sound studio. Instead, we are broadcasting from a war zone, so you may hear wind, you may hear tanks, and various munitions.
It's very dangerous here. I don't know why I came all this way.
Super dangerous. So, one thing that I've picked up from listening to other episodes of the Toddcast is that I'm not sure you're always 100% honest with your listeners.
Well, I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, I'll just say this. I think that it may increase your listenership. And I suppose it could also decrease it, or things could stay the same. But if you were more honest, I think it would potentially have an impact or not.
That's true. But I feel like I am forthright and honest at all times.
Okay. Well, that's great, because what I've been asked to do today...
Are you a member of the liberal media? Because I feel like this is fake news that you're throwing at me.
It's all fake news, if you think about it.
It really is. It's all fake.
I mean, what is reality?
That's true. I don't know what reality is.
Yeah, I mean... Other than that, we're all stardust. We're all chosen.
Here we are.
And we all just need to find our way back to the garden. I think other than that, it's all fake.
Those are all good points. All good points.
So I've been asked by...
It's a really creaky chair.
In a war zone, you get what you get.
Yeah.
You don't get upset.
Yeah, this chair took some shrapnel. It's a little rickety.
Yeah, that's right. So I've been asked by the state of California to conduct some testing.
Testing?
With you. And
with like machines?
This is personality testing.
It's like questions and answers
exactly.
A test.
And they've asked me to do it. Typically, they would ask a professional psychologist to do it.
Uh-huh.
Because you're out of state and they really want this conducted as soon as possible before you return, they asked me to go ahead and do it.
Oh.
So we're going to just proceed with that, if that's okay.
Sure.
what is your favorite color?
Green.
I don't believe that to be the case. Do you want to correct your answer?
No, that's my favorite color. It's always been green. What have you heard?
Have people been talking about your favorite color, do you think?
Just in general?
Yeah. Other people suggest that your favorite color might be blue?
No.
Or orange?
No.
Have you heard that?
No, I've not.
Okay. So you're sticking with your original answer?
It's green.
Okay.
I don't know what's happening. This is weird.
When you're traveling... on the freeway, normal traffic, four lanes.
Sure.
Which lane would you prefer?
Which lane would I prefer? How many lanes are there?
Four lanes.
And this is a highway, freeway type of
correct
situation? So it's four lanes all going in the same direction. It's not
four lanes on either side.
I see. And which lane would I like to be in?
Yes.
The second from left.
Second from the left. Okay. If life was a highway, what would you want to do with it?
I'd want to ride it all night long.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
That might be because I do have some Canadian heritage.
That could be. We are, by the way, this war zone happens to be quite close to Canada. That might also be impacting.
A lot of people don't know that there is a war zone
your
this
attitude
close to Canada. Yeah, it's very beautiful for a war zone.
It is actually quite nice.
Yeah.
One of the nicer ones.
Yeah.
If you can get there.
Yeah, but you have to be careful of the weaponized loons.
Yes.
Very dangerous.
They are very, very dangerous. okay, moving on with the test. If you could go back to age 13, knowing everything that you know now, so you'd be 13 years old, but you'd have the knowledge and experience of a man of your age.
Uh-huh.
Would you? Would you go back and live life over again?
So what you're asking is, if I only knew then what I know now, sort of thing?
Right.
Would I go back and do it again? No. No. Nope.
That seems reasonable to me. A lot of people say that, and I think, you know, they talk about, oh, if only I'd known then what I know now. And I think that's kind of BS.
Well, why would you want to know?
I mean, unless you made some horrible mistake, then I could see that.
Yeah, but in general,
for the most part.
In general, you know, I know that, like, a lot of the things that I did then were stupid, but...
Sure.
I think it's more fun to be stupid, and now that I'm less stupid...
It's less fun.
It's less fun.
Hmm. Yeah, I guess that's true, too. I just wouldn't be worried about that, you know, kind of like the butterfly effect thing.
Oh, yeah, I wouldn't want that either. Yeah, yeah, because you don't want to screw up Ashton Kutcher.
No. No, you really don't.
Yeah.
If the only music you could ever listen to again was an Eagles greatest hits album, would you eventually press the button?
You mean the button that would kill me? Or the button that starts the music?
It's just a button.
We don't know what the button does, is what you're telling me.
It's the button.
It's the button. And, okay, so in this scenario, is the Eagles playing indefinitely, or is it a choice that I have?
No, it's a choice where you either have no music at all in your life, or the music you have is the Eagles' greatest hits album.
And there's a button.
And then there's also a button.
That's
your third option.
Is this like that button in Lost, that if you don't press it every 7 minutes or whatever?
No, I think it's more of like a doomsday button. That's my impression.
So it would kill
but
everybody.
The test they gave me, it's a written thing, and I think it doesn't have any explanation.
And let me ask you this, too. Is this Eagles situation just affecting me, or is it the world over? Is the Eagles the only...
No, that's just you, I'm pretty sure.
Well, it would be unfair to blow up the world, so I think I just choose no music.
That seems like a reasonable option. I'm really curious to see what the results are of this.
Yeah.
We'll get them, by the way. We'll get them instantaneously. I just upload it, and the state of California gives me the results.
Oh, that's great.
If you were able to design all of the public men's rooms... You know, and by public, I mean including restaurants, buildings, whatever, shared men's rooms. Would you build the stall that where the walls only go like to 2 feet above the floor?
Mm-hmm.
Or would you build, you know, ceiling to floor walls and doors for the toilet stall?
I would leave the foot. You know, because, you know, what if your neighbor runs out of toilet paper, you know, and you have some toilet paper, you can hand it underneath that. But if it was floor to ceiling, that person would be SOL.
I guess that's true.
I don't want anyone.
You can't pass things back and forth.
I don't want anyone to have a poopy butt, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And I think that's important to avoid poopy butts.
I always assumed that the design... The not all the way to the floor design was either to save money.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is that it's probably easier to clean. You know, if you're mopping, if you're the guy mopping the floor, it's a lot easier to do it
without
the walls everywhere.
That's very true. So you have to think about the custodians as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I guess if you did floor-to-ceiling walls, you know, you should have some sort of access point, though. You know? Hmm. Like two doors.
Like a slot.
They have
you could knock on the door.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
could
get
hand
the toilet paper. But then I'm concerned that too many people might use that for, you know, glory hole purposes.
That might get weird. It would certainly be weird. I've never been in a bathroom that had that.
Had a glory hole?
Or a slot.
I only go to rest areas with glory holes.
Is there like a website where you research that? Is it like a,
yeah, gloryholes.com. You like, just go on there.
Can you do that on Google Maps? Can you do like
yeah,
find
yeah.
nearby?
Or if you're old school, you can call up AAA and they'll send you some triptych maps of a tour of the nation's glory holes.
For the elderly glory hole hunters?
Yeah, exactly.
If you saw a diseased rat drowning and there was a tiny rat-sized life preserver right there that you could throw to that rat, what would you do?
It's a diseased rat?
Diseased,
what
yeah.
the? What's the disease?
Well, I don't know. It's
can
probably,
it be spread to humans?
It's probably the plague. I mean,
but he's in the water?
Yeah.
Could the plague get into the water and into the...
I don't think that's how... way it works. I'm not sure though.
Is there also like a maybe a 22 rifle or something?
So oh, instead like put of it out of his misery,
yeah, yeah,
shot while drowning.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
seems like a pretty terrible way to go. I mean, even for a rat,
it does sound bad.
I don't know what.
I think that's the best option though. I mean, I don't think sending it a preserver is a good idea.
So you're saying, regardless of whether there's a rifle, you're saying no to the.
I'm not going to save a rat. No. Especially not a diseased one.
Okay.
I don't... Why would there be a small rat-sized life preserver? Why would that be available? Like, what's happening? Why is that happening?
I don't know. I mean, I think that might make you second-guess yourself, too. Like.
Well, now I'm wondering if this, like, is like a situation like the Littles. You remember the Littles? They were like mm-hmm. little part mouse, part person people who lived in the, you know, the walls
yeah,
and stuff.
Yeah.
And they were all right. So I don't
were
know.
Were they rats, though? Weren't they mice?
They were half mice and half people, I think. But my point is that this could be similar, but with a rat. And then I might...
Oh, yeah, like the rats of Nim.
Yeah.
They were thoughtful.
Yeah, they were thoughtful. They had secrets.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, they took care of people.
Yeah, I mean,
or
some
people,
some fictional rats are good, I guess. So I don't know.
You know what would be a good, I think a really good animated movie would be The Rats of Nim versus The Rabbits of Watership Down.
Oh, yeah. It would have a very bloody end, though.
It would be, yeah, it'd be a cool battle, though.
It would be cool. And then also what was the movie with the owls?
Oh, yeah.
Guardians.
I didn't see
Legend
that.
Of the Guardians. Yeah. Where there are owls.
Yeah, I haven't seen that.
Let's do the owls and the rabbits and the Nim rats.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That would be intense. It would be like a battle of wits versus, you know, the rabbits are like really ruthless.
Mm-hmm.
And then the owls are like death from above for rodents.
Yeah, exactly. They're what tips the scales in the war.
Yeah. You could really do like a whole Game of Thrones thing, just with different
kinds of different smaller animals.
Small animals, yeah.
Yeah,
that'd be good.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
I should stop putting great ideas like that on the public podcast.
Yeah, somebody's going to steal it.
Just play them up here.
They've been looking for an angle for the sequel to Legend of the Guardians for years now, so.
Yeah, and as I understand it, they've been looking for a vehicle for more rats.
Yeah. Yeah,
Everybody loves rats.
Oddly enough, rats have become very popular.
Yeah. All right, moving on with the personality test. What percentage of your social media usage, in other words, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, what have
I don't
you,
have Instagram.
What percentage of your social media usage happens while you are in the bathroom?
I would say 83%. Okay. That's why I didn't get Instagram, because I'd probably just take a lot of pictures going to the bathroom.
Oh, yeah, that probably would violate some terms of use.
Yeah, I feel like that might be bad. Yeah.
All right, this is on the test from the state of California, and it's, as I understand, it does not vary depending on who is being tested.
Okay.
December 25th, 1972. Mm-hmm. What were you doing?
December 25th, 1972. I was celebrating Christmas in my mother's... I would have been a baby. Just about a year old. So, yeah, I was celebrating Christmas as a baby.
And you have an independent recollection of that?
Yeah, I remember everything about being a baby. Yeah, it's a weird thing, but I remember everything clearly. Everything after that is a kind of a blur, but that first year is all very clear.
Were you able to speak English or some other language as a baby?
I just spoke baby.
So that doesn't really add up, because as I understand it, your ability to remember is connected to language.
Yeah, but there are scientific anomalies all the time, so you're just going to have to accept that. You know, it's like what's that lady from Taxi? Redheaded lady from Taxi.
I don't know. I don't really watch that show.
That's a great show. You should watch it.
I've heard it's good. Yeah,
it's amazing. But anyway, the redheaded lady—I can't remember her name off the top of my head. But she has one of those memories where she remembers absolutely everything. Every detail.
Photographic.
Every moment. It's more than that.
It's actually on the show or the actress?
No, the actress herself actually has this. They did a story on her on 60 Minutes. It's sort of amazing, but I guess it's a bit of an affliction.
Yeah. I can see that.
Yeah. But, you can say, what were you wearing on December 25th, 1972? And she'll know exactly what she wore that day.
Wow.
Yeah, it's crazy.
So she doesn't really have to work memorizing lines, because she just reads it once and...
Pretty much. Well, I don't know if it's like that. Mm. That's a good question. I can't remember.
It's more images.
It's not a photographic memory, but it's a perfect memory. There's a name for it. I just can't remember. Who's this guy?
If you say...
he's one of the soldiers.
If you say something like Skechers or Coca-Cola in a podcast, does that mean you have to pay the company?
No.
Okay, bye.
He's shell-shocked.
Yeah. The soldiers are so young up here near Canada.
Well, they're child soldiers. It's that kind of war.
It's that kind of war. It's really awful.
Yeah.
Awful.
That's terrible.
It's an awful war.
So, this is the last question from the state personality test.
Sure.
How many times a day, on average, do you think about diarrhea?
On a day? Well, I mean, I usually have it in the morning, so I think about it then. When it's happening, you think about it. And then I live in Southern California, so I go to a lot of pools, and they all have signs that say if you've had active diarrhea in the last 14 days, you shouldn't go in the pool. So I have to think about it a lot.
That seems like a good rule.
It is a good rule, but I have questions. Like, why 14 days? Mm. And how many people do you think are honest about that?
Well, that's the real concern.
And then what's the difference between, like, active diarrhea and
just a
non-active diarrhea? Like, what is that? What is active diarrhea versus just diarrhea?
Yeah, I don't really know.
What's the number, though, answer? Of how many times? A day?
Yeah, twice a day.
Two or three times a day. Probably.
Two or three times a day.
On average. On average.
Okay. All right, so let's see. I'm going to submit this to the state of California, to their online system. Let me just upload your answers. Okay. All right, I'm getting one of those symbols, you know.
It's thinking.
Moving around.
Yeah, it's thinking.
And this is shocking. I think that your listeners are going to be pretty amazed to hear this. I don't know about you. You may already be somewhat aware of the results, but I'm surprised, I guess.
Uh-huh.
According to this
personality
test from the state of California, you have a personality.
Oh, well, that's great. That's a relief.
I was gonna ask you how that makes you feel.
I feel really good. I was concerned for a while that I didn't have one, but it's nice to know. But it's only true in the state of California.
Well, it's only official in the state of California.
So in other states, they won't recognize me as having a personality?
It depends on the state. Some of them you can wave in, you know, with your California test results, and others you just gotta take the test again.
Oh, I see. So it's sort of like...
And they're all different. They have different...
It's like passing the bar.
Some of them are more difficult than others.
Sure, it's like passing the bar.
Yeah, some of them there's an essay portion.
Oh, well, I'm a pretty good writer. I mean, I could do the essays.
Yeah. Good.
Yeah.
So I think things are looking up for you.
I feel good.
So the other thing that the state wanted me to address with you, this isn't really a test, this is more of a concern that they're trying to address, and I think a number of governments are trying to address, is what would you do with the problem of Michael Bublé?
What would I do with the problem?
Yes.
I think the only sensible thing to do is lock him up in a place where there's no recording equipment or microphones or anything like that. I mean, if you want to really solve that problem. But then there are... I mean, it's a problem for some people, but other people do want to have a very Bublé Christmas, you know?
Yeah, that's kind of another problem, I think.
A Bublé Christmas?
I just think it's concerning that...
That people...
The number of people out there would actually listen to and purchase...
40...
His music.
40% of voters in this country love Michael Bublé.
I think incarceration is probably too harsh.
But if you want him to not sing, keep him away. I don't know how else. Like anywhere else, he's going to get out. He's going to sing. He wants to sing.
I think,
like
you
it
could,
or not, Bublé wants to sing.
There's probably some technology to mess up any like electronic equipment he's using to record,
uh-huh,
or broadcast or amplify. So then you've got him down to just like a guy just singing as loud as he can to whoever. And then if, you know, either you're handing out earmuffs, or, you know, you could just carry like a boombox so that anytime he tries to do it, there's, you know, some other kind of music blaring that kind of overpowers.
That sounds more humanitarian, you know, for
probably
Michael Bublé.
Probably more costly.
It sounds more expensive. The other thing
but,
you could
you know,
do is...
But, you know, incarceration is super expensive.
Yeah, that's true. Maybe with the government...
$1,000 a year.
Yeah, maybe the government should offer to, like, have a free procedure for anyone who wants it to have their hearing removed.
You could also probably threaten him in some kind of way.
Yeah.
I mean, if he had a choice.
Yeah, stop singing or I'll punch you.
Yeah, or you'll go to jail.
Yeah. Stop singing or Michael Bublé will go to jail?
Right.
Yeah, maybe that would work. But then I feel like it could complicate other legal cases.
Do you think that the people...
Because it's just Michael Bublé, you want to shut up, not everybody.
So Michael Bublé, he knows what he's doing. Like, he knows that he's covering other people's songs,
mm-hmm,
in just a cheesy way, and, you know, in many cases, making them, you know, white for people. Do you think the people who listen to him know that he's covering songs, or do they think, like, oh, you know, here's this great Michael Bublé. How does he come up with all these hits?
I don't know. That's a good question. I mean, but you can ask the same thing about people who like Rod Stewart.
I suppose that's true.
Although at one point he did do original songs.
Yeah, I thought that he did.
He did in the 70s and 80s, but then, like, after he sort of peaked when he started singing standards.
Is that right?
Yeah, that's what he does.
I'm not even aware of that part of his career.
Which is so funny to me because he's got the weirdest, raspiest...
Yeah.
It's kind of an unpleasant singing voice, but he does all these, like, things that crooners do, you know? But people love it. People love that. You know, it's like Michael Bolton.
Yeah.
He does a lot of that, too.
Yeah.
But Michael Bolton has demonstrated over the years that he has a great sense of humor about himself.
Right. At least there's that. I think that's, you know, I used to feel about Michael Bolton the same way I feel about Bublé.
Mm-hmm.
But then he did, like, you know, he did that, whatever, Andy Samberg, whatever, video and some other stuff.
Yeah.
It's been funny, and it has somewhat redeemed himself, I guess, with that. But I don't think that... I think Bublé has gone a step further than Bolton in badness.
Do you think part of that is that Bublé takes himself seriously?
Yeah, I suppose, and that others take him seriously. But I think that that was probably true of Michael Bolton at a certain point, right? What was that atrocious thing that he did? He covered Sitting on the Dock of the Bay. Was that what he did?
Did he do that? Yeah. I mean, he also did the... How am I supposed to live without you?
Yeah.
Now that I've been loving
I even saw a songbook that was like the music to Sitting on the Dock of the Bay, and it had Michael Bolton's name on it.
Yeah, I think he did do Sitting on the Dock of the Bay. I think you're right
about
that.
Which is just
an affront.
An outrage.
To Otis Redding. Yeah.
And so I feel like at that time he probably took himself seriously.
Maybe.
Certainly people took him seriously.
Well, he's a wealthy musician.
He
makes a lot of money for a lot of people,
including
himself, doing what he does.
Right.
So you can't really argue with a bottom line in a capitalist society.
I don't know. I mean, there are plenty of people who own businesses, corporations, whatever, and they're polluting, wrecking the environment, getting people sick, getting people tossed out of their homes.
Sure.
You know, who are filthy rich, and I can't argue with the fact that they're rich, but I can argue with and say the way that they've made their money is wrong. And
that's true.
Michael Bublé's, you know, offensiveness is not look, it's not as bad as those things, but it's still, there's something gross about it that
I mean, I gotta be honest with you, I wouldn't know a Michael Bublé song if it bit me in the ass.
I really don't
know.
But I've walked into whatever, not like personal parties, but like parties at schools or whatever, and they're playing, you know, Michael Bublé's version of a Nina Simone song. You know, just like that's something you do in polite society.
Well, yeah, I don't know what to tell you about that, but that's like long been a thing, that like elevator music. It's piped in non-offensive music, but it also is generally covers because it's got a familiar ring to it.
Mm.
So it lulls people into a, you know, a state of, I don't know, malleability, I guess.
Yeah.
They're easier to control that way. Mm. I mean, I think that's in a lot of ways what Michael Bublé's music does, is it controls people, controls their minds. You know, like a puppet master.
Yeah, I guess. But, see, I think that there's probably some of that with, like, pop music that's designed to sound a certain way, make you feel a certain way, or whatever, but that doesn't involve the, like, being a vulture of, you know, other people's art.
Well, I mean, people have covered other people's songs since pop music started.
True.
I don't know. I think your distaste for Bublé is more than that he's just covering songs. It's the way in which he covers these songs. Because you don't have a problem with Aretha Franklin covering a song by the Band.
No.
Or Otis Redding covering a song by the Rolling Stones.
Sure.
Because they put their spin on it, and their spin is soulful, for lack of a better word, I guess.
Right.
Bublé has less of that soul. He's just trying to make music that pacifies people. The elderly enjoy Michael Bublé.
There are young people that enjoy Michael Bublé, too.
I don't know what to tell you about those people.
They're the ones.
I would stay away from them. I would stay away from them.
Yeah. I was shocked, actually, the first time I discovered them.
But people like I like Phil Collins. A lot of people don't like Phil Collins.
Yeah, but Phil Collins, it's not whether you like somebody or not. It's just whether they're just disgusting, which is what Michael Bublé is.
Talking
facts.
You think Michael Bublé is disgusting?
Yeah, he's a repulsive musician.
Like 14 straight days of active diarrhea, repulsive.
Yeah, definitely.
You really have an extreme prejudice against Michael Bublé.
Yeah, I do. Yeah. I think I do. I have never even met him. He could be like real nice in person or something.
Well,
I kind of doubt it, though.
I don't know. A lot of people turn out to be nice, but a lot of people like that. I heard that Yanni is not very nice.
Hmm. Yeah, I'm not sure I ever thought one way or another about it.
Well, I think that Joe Esterhaus, the screenwriter, wrote Basic Instinct.
Yeah.
Wrote a Yanni-esque character into the third act of the film Showgirls, because he found him distasteful. But honestly, that's interesting because I thought Joe Esterhaus was kind of awful.
He also seemed like a jerk.
He seemed like kind of a not good person, but yeah. I don't know. He's certainly an interesting guy.
Certainly was a not good movie.
It was so not good. It was kind of awesome, but yeah, yeah. And I read Joe Esterhaus's book, Hollywood Animal, and he was I don't know. He likes himself a lot.
Did he do other movies besides that one?
Yeah, he's done tons of. I mean, he doesn't really write movies anymore, but he was like the biggest screenwriter in Hollywood during the 90s.
Oh, really?
Like 80s and 90s. Like, and I think he wrote some good...
Another movie?
I think he wrote Sliver. He did a lot of those, like, erotic thriller, trashy movies that people loved.
Yeah. I don't think I saw very many of those.
Did you see Basic Instinct?
I eventually did. I didn't see it, like, when it came out or anything.
Yeah.
I think I did see it at some point.
It's not a very good film.
Yeah, I don't like that kind of movie for the most part. I find them, there's something about them that annoy me.
Trashy thrillers?
Not necessarily thrill, like maybe this is what you mean by trashy, like having an affair and
Well, yeah, they call
that to be annoying.
They call them erotic thrillers.
Yeah,
I see what you're saying. Although some of them are fun. Like, I thought Body Heat was good. That's an erotic thriller.
I don't really remember that one.
And which had an almost carbon copied plot, but still a fun movie, was The Last Seduction.
I definitely didn't see that.
Some of them were okay.
Yeah.
I don't know, is Jagged Edge one? I don't know if that, you know.
I like that title, you know, like Body, whatever, those movies, the titles of those movies bring about, but
you know, Jagged Edge is the one with Jeff Bridges and Glenn Close, you know.
It's the one where they like boil the bunny rabbit.
Fatal Attraction. That's Glenn Close and Michael Douglas.
Yeah, okay, that's the Glenn Close one I was thinking of.
Yeah, that's probably one of the more...
I did not like that movie.
I wouldn't say Fatal Attraction's a good movie, but I enjoyed it for what it was. I mean, when I saw it in the theaters in high school, I enjoyed it. But we were all, you know, high school kids laughing at the craziness of it.
Yeah.
You kind of got to be in the mood for a trashy thriller.
Yeah, see, it's maybe I just never am.
Do you like thriller films at all? Like, you prefer like a paranoid thriller, like a Parallax View or a Marathon Man type of thing?
Can you name something more recent? I'm trying to think.
Paranoid thriller that was recent? I don't know.
Was Jacob's Ladder, is that a paranoid thriller?
No, that's a supernatural. Thriller, I would say.
I think I liked that.
Jacob's Ladder?
Yeah.
Oh, that's one of my favorite movies.
Yeah.
It's scary.
I haven't seen it in a long time, but...
gives me the...
The
willies.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember liking that. Yeah.
There are definitely thrillers that I've seen. I don't know. I mean, I don't know what subgenre of thrillers, but they're definitely like... thrillers I've seen that I liked.
A lot of the thrillers like that come out now are like have like Denzel Washington in them. You know. But there, I'm trying to think if there have been, you know, there's like a lot of B movies that come out that kind of have erotic thrillers. But I haven't seen. There was like one with Idris Elba, I want to say, where he was like. But that was like a home invasion thriller. Those are other kinds of thrillers. There's a lot more home invasion thrillers these days than there are erotic ones, I think.
Yeah.
You know, we went to see that Breaking In with that lady from, I think her name's Gabrielle Anwar or something, from the Bring It On movies, you know? Mm-hmm. But she was a mom and a bunch of creeps broke into her house and took her kids, like, hostage. And she fights back. But it's really cheesy B thriller, but you know.
See, those kinds of movies. I don't like movies about crime. That
because you're a lawyer, it's a busman's holiday.
Yeah, and I think it's like bad for. I think people. As even though everybody goes into a movie being like, I know this isn't real, like, you watch that stuff, and then you start being afraid of things and start. You know, voting for a politician who's like, I gotta, you know, lock up more people or whatever. Like, I think that those.
You think that movies affect people? You think people. Well, people are stupid.
Yeah, I think it. I mean, it's not even being stupid. I think it's just like.
No, I think it's being stupid.
If you don't think about it and you just go and you see it and it makes you scared, and then, like, you know, the TV news is the same way. It's like. You know, crime's going down, but you can't tell that from watching the TV
because the
news.
Stories are sensationalist. I see what you're saying. I mean, I definitely feel that's more true about news, especially local news. But you're right. I mean, there's, you know, a lot of people actually think Ice-T is a cop because he's been on Law and Order SVU for so long.
Right.
It's like,
right.
You guys are idiots.
Right. Although that's happened for forever, right? I mean, even Ronald Reagan started to think he was, you know, he had done the things that he had done in the movie.
Well, but that was Ronald Reagan. What I'm saying is the audience that watched Ice-T knows he's not a cop.
Yeah.
And he thinks anyone who thinks he is an idiot.
Right.
but people actually think that.
It does work. Well, and that's what they say about the, you know, you present somebody and after a while, you know, even though it's on TV, they start to associate those things with that person.
That's true.
Our current president, supposedly, because of his reality show where he sat behind a desk and made decisions and whatever.
And people thought that would be great.
And people were like, oh, that's very how presidential of him. Even though it was just, you know that reality shows are not
real.
Reality and, you know, it's all.
Well, I mean, those things, reality TV and news, and certainly TV news has certainly blurred a lot of lines. So, yeah, I guess people could be scared. But at least in, like, something like Breaking In, and, I mean, these are movies that didn't do that well, but they exist and currently, and they the critics didn't like them, but, like, Breaking In, there was another movie called Traffic in the last year. And what's interesting to me about these is, and maybe they're doing a good thing if you're right about how movies affect people's thinking, but in these movies, unlike, you know, the movies of the 80s, these type of trashy movies of the 80s, in these movies, it's the leads, the heroes, the people who have to fight the bad guys are black people. Mm-hmm. And the bad guys are almost always white people.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that's good.
Yeah.
Maybe people should be more afraid and terrified of white people.
Right. I think that stuff is really important. But I don't think there's enough of it. I mean, I don't know if it was the news or some newsy podcast, and they were talking about a recent study of portrayals of Latino people in TV shows and how they are, you know, almost, first of all, they're way underrepresented versus
true
the population, and when they are, they're most likely to either be portrayed as a criminal or portrayed, I think, as like a servant or something like that.
Right.
And so there isn't...
And cops.
Yeah, maybe cops, but there's not a... You know, you don't get the same kind of human view of people, you know, Latino people, or people of color, because they're not in those roles, you know, where you see them as humans or as the hero or whatever.
That's true. I mean,
I do think that I mean, we all learn through stories, you know, and that's,
no.
If those are the stories that we're taking in, then that makes a difference.
Yeah.
I would hope that the liberal elites in Hollywood would try to correct that a bit more.
Well, I obviously, you know, at this stage in our history, there's a lot of shouting at Hollywood from within Hollywood, but these are people who are not in power. And the truth is most of the people who have, I know this is still like concept of Hollywood liberal elitism, but it's really not. There's certainly Hollywood liberalism, but I wouldn't say that liberalism is any different than liberalism anywhere else.
Right.
And the truth is the people who are in power are generally white dudes.
Yeah.
Old white dudes. Yeah. I mean, and you look at, like, the Academy, which, you know, I don't take seriously the Academy and what they choose as the important movies and what they discard. I've never been a fan of it, but they have finally brought in more people of color into the Academy, you know, and they made the celebration about that because there was all the protests about, you know, not enough people of color represented in these award shows, so that's good, but it's still 70% of the Academy is old white guys.
Right.
So it, until that paradigm shifts, you know, that won't change, but it's also, I mean, movies go where the market is.
Right.
And part of the problem is movies like Traffic and Breaking In are you know, they're kind of low budget and they're not, you know, they're slapdash, mm-hmm. you know, so people don't go to them. They're almost exploitative in a way. Traffic certainly is very exploitative, but summer, but I do see more and more of that. You know, it's just for whatever reason they don't. In the end, you got to make a good movie, you know, to get people excited. Even if it doesn't get them excited to the theater, you have all this afterlife now of streaming and DVDs and whatever. That, you know, something could pick up traction as it goes along, even if it's not a giant hit right away. But a lot of these movies are kind of trashy.
Right.
And that's, you know, a bummer. But I like trashy movies, and I've always been a fan of B-movies, so I like movies like Breaking In. And I do think it's cool that they are making more movies like that, where the basically the races are shifted, because when I grew up, you know, it's like Dirty Harry movies, and the bad guys were always people of color.
Yeah.
And like in the 90s, it was like gangsters, you know, and all that stuff. And it's nice that. And there's now it's like more often than not with those kind of thrillers, even if the protagonists themselves are white, more often than not, the antagonists, the monsters, are creepy white people.
Right.
That's something I've noticed. So, I mean, I think that's a good. But part of that could be why everybody, you know, why the racists are screaming now, because their fantasies aren't being met.
Yeah, right. Is there a show or a movie, or a recent movie, where it's just like going after neo-Nazis? Like, that seems like that would be a concept that would be popular.
That would you mean just like a straight up action movie or a vigilante movie or
some kind of either an action movie or
there was a
cop type show
where they're chasing down. Well, one thing I'm excited about is Spike Lee's new movie.
Oh right,
The Black Klansman, I think it's called.
Yeah,
it's based on a true story. But that looks like kind of a fun movie about that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, you'd think there'd be more like Indiana Jones fought Nazis sort of thing. That sort of wish fulfillment thing. But, you know, I mean, I think it might be, you know, I don't know. It might be Hollywood still hedging its bets. Because clearly, you know, nearly half this country is still, if not overtly and aggressively racist, or at least don't realize that they're racist, sort of thing. So Hollywood might be like, well, we're scaring away too much of the audience if we do that. I don't know. But I'll tell you what, if you want to see a good movie about a neo-Nazis, and it's not an action movie with cops chasing neo-Nazis, it's a scary thriller. But it's about, came out a couple years ago. It's called Green Room.
Oh, I've seen that.
Yeah.
It's a great movie.
Yeah, I love that movie. And, you know, it'd be cool if there was more of that.
Yeah.
And I would like the idea of, you know, like a vigilante movie. You know, because they just remade Death Wish, and it was just more of the same.
Yeah.
You know, the bad guys were mostly white. So it had less of the... But, I mean, in the first Death Wish, it was like the bad guys that got him to be a vigilante were white dudes for the most part, but then he went around shooting people of color.
That sounds about right. That's accurate portrayal.
And the new Death Wish is less of that, but it's still sort of like, it would have been more fun if it had been just a guy shooting Nazis, just decided, I'm going to go kill Nazis.
Right.
Yeah, I agree.
I think that would be, I'd watch that.
Yeah, so would I. Get Brad Pitt to do that character that he was in that Inglourious Basterds movie, which was so disappointing.
Yeah.
Who said, let's kill some Nazis. And then they didn't kill enough Nazis.
Yeah. Yeah, it was all right, but it was...
Well, the movie, it was, you know, paying homage to, it was sort of like... It wasn't even a remake of it. It just had a similar title that was misspelled. But that movie, Inglourious Basterds, the original, which was a spaghetti exploitation film, 70s literally was that. It was like a ripoff of the Dirty Dozen, but they were there to kill Nazis.
Yeah.
That was the whole thing.
Yeah.
You know, and it had ludicrous sequences, like the you know, the Dirty Dozen type guys like came up you know, on a river or a lake or something, and they're looking through trees, and there's a bunch of naked ladies, you know, like swimming, and they're like, ooh, and then the naked ladies realize who they are, and they like pull guns out, and you realize they're a bunch of Nazi ladies. So that's why when I heard that Tarantino was doing a big budget, what I thought was a remake of that, I was like, that sounds great.
Yeah,
but it wasn't that at all. Talking in a bar.
Yeah, I didn't even know that that was...
Yep. Yep. Italian film. It's one of those movies where half the characters are speaking in English, but you can tell it's dubbed anyway. They probably shot it without sync sound.
Yeah.
So the actual actors, I think like Fred Williamson is one of that football player guy. He's one of the guys. So, you know, it's his voice and it still looks a little weird, but then like half the cast is, they're speaking Italian.
And it's just dubbed.
Yeah. So that's sort of weird, but.
Yeah. Ugh.
But it's still a fun movie.
Yeah. That's funny.
You have to get past that, I guess.
Well, I think we should just start a letter-writing campaign.
Yeah, to get
all the
more...
major studios.
Get more Nazis shot on film.
Yeah.
I'm into it. You need to take a shower, by the way. So you want to wrap up your show, or...?
Yeah. I hope you're saying that because I said that I needed to do that, not because of the wind is blowing.
No, the wind is blowing a stink. All right, do you want to say goodbye?
Until next time on the Toncast with a different host and the same special guest every special time.